Tonight on the Goblin's Corner.
Custom Pantheons.
That's how we roll.
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 Welcome to the Goblin's Corner. My name is Eric.
And I'm Matt.
And tonight,
we're doing Custom Pantheon.
Absolutely.
Good call.
We're going to get your god on.
Absolutely.
Or goddess.
Yeah. In here, I have gods written for everything, but that's because for me, it's just the lowercase, completely neutral version of it.
Well, it can be anything.
We can do deity.
Deities work as well.
Yeah.
Custom deities, custom pantheons for your game, and we're going to get into the mix on all of that. But before we get to that, we've got a question of the week, if I recall.
In fact, it's also going to be on theme, as I usually try to do, but don't always succeed.
Absolutely shocking.
So, this week's question of the week is, if you could be the god of a relatively minor thing or things, what would it be?
I'm going to let you answer this time first.
Okay.
While I ponder my answer.
Certainly. So, obviously, I'm the god of mugs.
That only is appropriate to me.
Beer mugs, coffee mugs, tea mugs, cocoa mugs. I'm just the god of mugs.
Mugs, yeah. Just mugs.
And, you know, what mug collectors.
Muggings? Muggings as well?
No, I'm, in fact, you know the story on that, so.
What if they mugged somebody with a mug? Would that be under your purvey?
Possibly. And mostly only if they deserved mugging, though. Because I feel like I would work under the goddess of joy, right? Because everything that comes in a mug.
Mm-hmm.
Is designed strictly to make you happy. You got coffee, you got beer, you got cocoa, you got tea. Like, all of those are happy type things. So I feel like, that'd be who I speak up to.
But not necessarily the god of cups or glasses.
No. Mugs.
Specifically mugs. Earthen yes. mugs?
Well, some of them. Could be a wooden mug.
Could they be beer steins as well?
I don't know. Do mugs with caps count?
Because I see that as...
Who's going to fight me for it?
Yeah, well, that's also a little bit more of a different god than I would see the god. You know, like the god of mugs, you know, it's got kind of a nice beard, maybe. Not necessarily buff, like, warrior rager, but more of like, you know, it's got some bunny slippers on or maybe the dude bathrobe or something like that. Hair slightly disarray.
Yeah.
Whereas the god of beer steins, I can see with a battle axe.
I can
slightly
see
dwarf-like.
I can see that.
Or frequenting, you know, Renfest or something like that. I could be completely wrong with this, and it may not be right.
I'm good with it either way.
You can have beer steins too if you want, though.
Yeah, no, I'm fine with just doing mugs. I feel like steins are a little pretentious. Right, a lot of times they have like fancy carvings and doodads on top, and you've got the whole got to press it down with your thumb to drink out of it. Man, mug people don't have time for steins.
That's a different style, man.
Yeah,
wake
I don't feel
in the morning. You have your mug of coffee.
Right, you don't have a stein of coffee. Who does that? Well, okay, if you do that, that's
write,
fine. I don't have a problem
us.
With it. But
I want to know. I want to know if you have a stein for coffee specifically. Send that image to us. info@goblinscorner.com. Or you can reach me, eric@goblinscorner.com.
Or me, matt@goblinscorner.com.
Oh, wait, I got an answer to this question, too.
Yeah.
All right, so let's see. If I could be any type of god of relatively minor things, it would be the god of small missing objects.
I'm with it, yeah.
I call myself Lefto because it was something that you left behind.
Yeah.
So, ballpoint pens, the last screw in an IKEA chair set, the missing tie that you only need for your job interview.
Where'd you set down your lighter?
Where you sit? Oh, absolutely. Where your lighters go? Where your
keys?
Pens. I think I mentioned already. Socks.
Yeah,
definitely socks.
Especially the lost socks.
The locks. Yeah, the lost socks. They all come to my realm, and I nest on it like a giant gold dragon.
Sure. I do not see you as a gold dragon.
No, it'd be a patch.
Lawful good is not
a
your scene.
Patchwork dragon of some sure. sort.
That brings up my theory that I believe applies to you, which is the plaid dragon.
Plaid dragon?
Yeah. I feel like you could be a plaid dragon.
I could get behind a plaid dragon. I got plaid love. I could do that. Yeah.
Little ska band playing in the background, just nested on your trove of various important and unimportant objects.
But they all be important to me.
Well, sure.
That's interesting. I'll have to give that a little bit more thought. I like that, though. All right. Yeah, we're veering off topic.
Okay. Well, sort of.
Sort of. So, custom pantheons.
Indeed. This one, you know, this one's near and dear to me. I am the cleric partner of this crew.
It's true. Whereas I am generally the wizard, wild mage, or
warlock.
I'm usually the spell slinger.
Right.
And Matt tends to be the cleric of our group. And 9 times out of 10, if no one's playing a cleric, that's because Matt's playing the cleric.
I don't mind filling the role. And, you know, it's not like it's a burden unto me.
No. And because we've got lots of cleric love, why not make some custom pantheons for your game?
Sure.
Why use just the standard issue gods that come in the source books? Why make a custom pantheon at all?
There's lots of reasons to make a custom pantheon, especially if you've homebrewed your world.
Sure. So let's talk about some of these custom reasons.
All right. Well, the first one is lore, right? Your creation myth for your world will either inform your pantheon or it will be informed by your pantheon.
Mm-hmm. And this equates to story in my book. So not just story in terms of so-and-so is the god of, I don't know, fine dining, but also because he's the god of fine dining, all artwork that has to do with anything in a restaurant may be equated to this god as well.
Sure.
So relates to art or how it relates to people, how your characters or NPCs interact in the world of the game that you have either homebrewed or you've just interjected some new gods into an existing campaign.
Yeah. I mean, maybe you need some linens as a holy symbol. Who knows?
Who knows? Sorry. All I could see is the Seneschal for the Dead as a waiter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I can see that.
Or a
maitre d'.
Yeah, maitre d'.
It's 100% a maitre d'.
You die in battle. You show up. There's a maitre d' just sit in there with his fine suit. Table for two, sir? Table for two. Oh, yes. You fell in battle with your friend. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We've got to make that. That is definitely going to be a pantheon we have to come up with now.
Jean-Pierre, the god of fine dining?
The god of fine dining. I love that. Okay, let's talk about some more reasons. So you mentioned flavor is another good reason to make a pantheon.
Yeah. So your pantheon can either emphasize what you as the creator of this homebrew world or the cultures of your world find important.
Yeah. So there's lots of different examples of what might be viewed as important through the eyes of the people that worship this particular pantheon, right? So holidays and festivals, which if you haven't listened to that previous episode, do so. It's very good.
But yeah, I mean, it can influence their clothing style, their coloration. You know, I mean, do people dye their hair? What do you do to celebrate?
Yeah, anything about their culture, even phrases that they use. By Thor's goats, for example, is literally a phrase that people once said because Thor had a bunch of goats.
Yep.
Which I find hilarious.
Well, they pull his chariot, sir.
Yeah, man. By Thor's goats, pulling them, just big gnarly looking goats, pulling the God of Thunder's chariots along. The wars they fight in could be fought because of the associations that your pantheons have.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, do you really think in the Forgotten Realms, followers of Shar and followers of Saloon get along? Nope.
No.
Death at sight, man.
Yep.
They're slinging spells as soon as they see each other.
I mean, you know, Lathander and basically anybody that's okay with undead. That's going to be a big no-no.
Merkel.
Yeah.
What's the other one?
Kelimbor?
No, Kelishi or whatever it is.
Oh, the actual lich. The drow goddess of undead.
Yes.
I know who you're talking about. Yes. Even if I could get the spelling right.
We're striking this from the record tonight, sir.
One of the other things about flavor that you get is You can tell what a culture finds important, oftentimes based off of what is rare and what informs their survival, right? So if you're in a place where fishing is the 100% sole means of meat sustenance,
you're going to have a god of fishing.
You are absolutely going to have a god of fishing.
Maybe even a big whale as one of the minor deities or something like that, or maybe the enemy of the fishermen.
Yeah. So that's definitely something to think about. But I think the major reason to have a custom pantheon is story. Story is obviously what we're all here for in the first place, right?
Yeah. And if you've just only listened to this podcast episode, we're all about some story in everything we have talked about before this and will continue to talk about. Story is the reason why you play this.
Right. Otherwise,
and fun,
play a video game.
Yeah. Yeah. You can have fun lots of different ways, but we're telling a story with a bunch of other people. And story, I think, is essential. Well-built pantheons embrace that idea of story.
Sure. It allows you to tailor your religions as enemies, allies, or just utilities to be used by your players.
So you just toss it in to set up an event or some kind of quest?
Sure. Or it is a place you can go if you are poisoned or diseased and you have a church of a healing deity. They're probably not going to stand for that. It's probably going to be a very moderate fee to get cured of one of those things.
Yeah. Or what if they don't exist? And how do your characters deal with the fact that they may not have healing?
Yeah.
And I look at it also as it's an out for the DM. So you don't have to pigeonhole yourself into writing that someone else came up with. And this isn't bashing any of the books, whether it's D&D or any other game. Because, you know, we're talking obviously somewhat of a fantasy setting, but you can get sci-fi with this as well.
Sure.
The point is that it allows you to come up with unique instances in your game that affect the characters who you are playing with. And for those of you who've run multiple games before, you kind of get this because not every group of players is going to play the same way.
Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah. And if you're homebrewing stuff, you might toss different things at different characters or explore different avenues of thought.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, not only could you do different religions, but you can do different factions in the same religion. You could have a story that is based strictly off of every character in your group being the same religion, but they're in a faction that is violently opposed to another faction of their own religion.
In addition to that, it also allows for unique heroes and villains, too.
Absolutely.
Based off of whatever beliefs they have.
Right.
So you could have the intrigue, like you mentioned, within a particular system, two factions playing. You could have what happened to non-believers.
Sure. In Forgotten Realms, the faithless get strapped to a wall or mortared to a wall.
Yeah, they're kind of fucked in that. They just basically get to be a building.
Although, in fairness, right, not believing in deities
that are walking around,
that are literally stomping around the world and just wreaking havoc, that I can see where they would get irritated by that.
Yeah, that makes a little bit of sense to me, I suppose.
You can't be an atheist. I don't feel like you can be an atheist in Forgotten Realms. Like, maybe you don't like any of them, and I get that, because they are problematic at best, but
that would be really interesting. Or the followers of Ao.
Yeah.
That's really interesting because they don't even get, like, he doesn't even answer any of his followers.
Well, yeah, he's way too far above that.
Yeah, man, he's CEO, man. He doesn't have time to take personal calls. Come on. So story gives you that flavor, which is what we're all about, right? We're all about that flavor. Now, we have come up with, I don't really have a list, we've come up with some ideas as to how to best put together a pantheon or set of pantheons, because just because we're talking about a pantheon, you could have more than one. I mean,
sure.
going on our world,
right, There are dozens.
Well, at the same time, I mean, think about it like this. When the Romans were in power, they also had the Greek gods.
Right.
And the Nordic gods and, you know,
Egyptians, Assyrian.
Everywhere over the world, it was all, you know, all kinds of pantheons floating around at the same time. Your campaign world can be exactly the same.
Sure.
Could be based off of species, so dwarves versus elves versus humans, or it could be shared with all of those. And we're going to get to some of these rules to build a better pantheon.
Yeah. So I think the first thing you have to think of when you're building a pantheon is, how was the world created?
Yep.
Because that's going to influence how your pantheons get built.
So give me an example.
Well, I think some of the examples you actually gave was, is it a giant tree world? Or like a series of islands.
So Theros is a good example of that, where it's a series of islands and it's everything else outside of that is the edge of the world.
And is the world just one elaborate illusion, right? Buddhism, actually.
Yeah, or the Matrix.
Or even the stone giants. Maybe they're right.
That's true. Yeah, we could all be living a stone giant's dream, brother.
Yep.
Yeah, how was the world created? What's the makeup of the world? Is it two worlds overlapping on top of one another? Is it a blasted sandstorm hellhole like Dark Sun? Is it something that nobody remembers like Orth? I feel bad about that. I remember Orth.
There are lots of people who still like and play.
I love Orth, but like they're not popping any books out lately, and it irritates me. So come up with whatever your game world happens to be playing in.
And how did it get put together?
Yeah, and think of like unique features, right? Not just, so for example, let's use Eberron as an example. So back in the day, you've got the giants, and they were a big thing, and then the dragons rebelled, and then you have Zoriat coming through. All of that influences the gods and deities in some way, shape, or form.
Sure.
The way that the planes are structured also is another good, because how your cosmos is structured obviously will reflect how your deities are structured, or vice versa.
Yep.
You might think of the deities first and then build your cosmology.
I think I've got a little bit of that slightly further down.
Sure.
But so the first thing you're going to need to do when you're constructing a pantheon / pantheons is decide how big it is and how many of them there are going to be.
Now, we should preface this before we dive any further. Just like our city building episode, all of this information is filler for you as a storyteller to give to your NPCs. If none of them are playing clerics, or it's just a minor footnote in your story, or maybe you just use them for the big bad, like maybe you've invented a pantheon just for evil creatures to throw at your players,
Sure. Then
take some of this stuff. Don't write a novel.
Right.
But if you're making your own unique game world, you're going to obviously want to fill more information in as we go along. So all of these rules... when I say rules, all these suggestions we have.
Yeah, that's what they are. They're suggestions.
Yeah, for filler.
Right.
But the point is your characters may not care all of this, but you as a storyteller should probably at least have an idea of what some of this stuff is.
Sure. Also, if you have someone that wants to play a cleric, right, and you've broken it down to tiny little bit, bite-sized pieces, right, you can have them develop that religion, that church, with you.
Oh, I think that's a great idea. Yeah.
Because now they feel like they have a hand in the direction this world went.
Now, let's say you're a DM and you've come up with a set of pantheons and you want to introduce this to your characters, but you don't want to give it all at once. One of the things that we can suggest is base it by level. A first level cleric may not be initiated into the higher mysteries of his faith or her faith as opposed to a 15th level cleric.
Sure.
And that gives you as a storyteller
time.
To make stuff, right? Yeah. A couple episodes at least to, you know, get to the point where they can know everything they need to know about their religion. So that helps a little bit too. All right. Let's jump back in. So you were mentioning size and number.
Right. Because if your world has one dominant religion or one dominant pantheon, then it's probably going to be fairly large. And involved, it's going to probably cover a lot of little niche minor deities.
Yeah, and you need to know why it's the biggest and baddest.
Right. Or the only.
Did they beat every other pantheon up?
Or were they literally the people that created the world, and they have simply locked it away from other pantheons?
So, which could mean that the planes could be locked away, or a different cosmology than the rest of whatever game universe you're playing in.
Sure, that is true.
Not only that, obviously, how many are actually in the pantheon? Is it like one over god and five other gods, a couple demigods? Is it 15, 20? Is it a whole family? Are they all, you know, yeah, it's like party of five? What's going on with the numbers? And are there any hidden ones that are to be revealed later? Kind of give you a little storytelling out as well.
Absolutely. Now, if you're going to have cultural pantheons, whether it be divided by race such as the Seldarine, or whether or not it's simply different locations developed different pantheons, then you're probably not going to want to have 30 gods per pantheon.
Yeah, because that would easily get overrun.
The other thing you can do, if you've got multiple pantheons and they're culturally separated, is you can have gods that overlap into multiple pantheons, right? Like a god of travel,
okay,
is the perfect example for that. Most likely, his followers, her followers, their followers, whatever, probably have visited multiple cultures.
That would be a good assumption.
And if they've done that, then they have taken that religion to multiple places. Now, you save a couple people's lives, and you probably are going to have a couple converts. Or somebody who didn't necessarily have faith somewhere down the line. If this guy just happens to show up, throws around a couple miracles, and all of a sudden this person's world is a significantly better place, this god has results. I'm down with this god.
Yeah, and it comes down to really just time management. If you're making your own custom world, then you don't have the time to come up with all of the different deities for every single species, especially since when you have one god of agriculture for humans, one god of agriculture for elves, it's kind of the same thing, really, in some ways. Now, one of the things you might want to consider is how culturally different they are.
Sure.
So, in certain game worlds, we'll just use elves and humans as an example, elves are could be vastly different than humans. And then in other campaign settings, they're just like slender humans, right? They're just kind of the same. There's less cultural differences in right. some ways. Halflings are a good example of that too.
Sure. They've got their own pantheon, but they're very, very close to just small humans.
Yeah. Well, it depends on the game.
Well,
right?
That's true.
And so you might come up with the determination that I don't need all of these if cultures share similar mentality.
Sure.
Now, if there's something vastly unique about a culture or a species, then yeah, give it its own god if you want.
Right.
And that adds a little bit of flavor to that particular mindset. It's kind of like what the difference between a god of invention and a god of artifice.
Right.
They're kind of the same thing, right? But depending upon the story you're playing in, you might have two, or they might share. The same thing goes with dwarves, elves, gnomes, whatever you're playing with in your campaign.
Sure.
All right. So you've figured out your gods or goddesses in your pantheon. Let's talk about organization.
Organization is a relatively simple question, i.e., do your gods have a hierarchy, right? Do you have Zeus at the top and then Hera, and then do you move further down to their kids and or brothers? Like, you know, you got your Poseidon, who's kind of off to the side, but he's close to the same power level.
All the way down to Heracles at the bottom.
Right. So you could have a hierarchical.
As a demigod.
Sure. You could have a freaking council of gods, right? Like maybe they're all equals and each is simply in charge of what they're in charge of. right? If I decide that there's going to be a tidal wave, don't argue with me. I'm the tidal wave guy, and I make tidal wave decisions.
Sure. Sorry, for some reason I thought of the music service tidal when you said that, and all I could think of is, listen, when the party happens, I bring the music, all right? Nobody else.
Sure.
The god of random music programs. Not only that, it could be broken down to worshiper based. So power is shared according to the amount of worshipers. So while I might have the power of the storms, only if I get a certain amount of worship.
Right.
So I might share the same portfolio with the god of air.
Sure.
And so the god of storms and the god of air might fight. They might compete against each other for worshipers. And so when the god of storms gets powerful, then that god can control the air and the weather and all that stuff. But if the god of weather gets more followers, then they can control that. And so that's kind of a fun power dynamic. You can throw some tension in.
Absolutely. And, you know, you go, the Forgotten Realms moved in that direction at one point, which was basically the more faith you got, the more powerful you were. You could actually move up in category of deity from lesser to all the way up to major.
Yeah, they had like, what, minor deity, lesser deities, greater deities. And then they had powers as well, if I recall, like minor power. And those were like concepts of not necessarily a anthropomorphic
right
creature, but more of like a concept of a force, I think. They got really specific with stuff at one point. I think they're still pretty specific now, but...
And that actually bleeds into our next point, which is how powerful are the gods?
Sure.
And are some of them more powerful than others?
So in some campaigns, they may just be wizards who ascended and they can still be killed.
Sure.
They're just mortals. They're basically immortals walking around.
Right.
But they're technically in a mortal frame.
They are amortal.
Amortal.
That's the appropriate word for that. They don't die of old age, but they can be killed.
Yes. And as we mentioned, higher up in the grade, they could be cosmic forces of some sort. Like literally, I created the entire universe. There's no concept of I. I am only the apseity. You know, I have everything and anything.
Right. So before we get into our next point, I think it's about time for a break.
We'll be back right after these messages.
If there are any topics you would like us to cover, goods or services you would like us to review, or if you would like to sponsor an episode, we would love for you to contact us at info@goblinscorner.com.
And we're back.
Welcome back.
All right, so we're talking about pantheons, yeah, making your gods, and we last mentioned how powerful are they?
Right. You know, we there's a whole power scale, and we actually started to touch on that, right? You've got your people who are basically just slightly extra powerful wizards or what have you.
Noobs that won the lottery, essentially.
Right. All the way up to cosmic beings that can shatter mountains and tear the world apart.
Usually in a campaign, they will lie somewhere in between those.
One would hope.
You probably have a couple demigods where they're just like, hey, listen, you can't mess with me. My dad's a god, to some kind of over god or... To that dude's dad, basically.
All right. So you've decided you've got all these gods, but how did they become gods?
Oh, yeah.
Right? That's part of where you have to go there.
They all have an origin story of some sort.
Right. Now, are they cosmic powers? Right? Were they gods already? Are they the ones that created the world?
Or did they kill the ones that created the world?
Like
Zeus, yeah, killing Cronus.
You've got that option. Now, I mean, technically Zeus was still already born a god because he was the child of a god. But
he killed the one who
created the world. Yeah. Right. What if they were powerful mortals that left their own world and discovered this new one and basically claimed the inherent power of this new world to become deities?
That's cool. Maybe they were the only intelligent people or the first intelligent people to show up.
Right.
And because they were the first intelligent individuals, they became manifestations of this world. I like that origin story. Were they brought to the world from some sort of outside force? And that doesn't necessarily the same thing as what we just said. It's more of a, well, we'll go back to Forgotten Realms with Mohorandi.
The Mohorandi.
Yeah, the Mohorandi. If you read the stories, they're basically Sumerians.
Sure. I mean, if you, Tiamat is
a Sumerian,
our real world mythology.
Yeah. And they were
and
brought.
And the whole Mohorandi pantheon.
They were all brought from another world, basically Earth, and now they brought their deities with them.
Right.
So it could be some sort of scenario like that.
Sure. You could,
or it could be God of Travelers, you know, just messing around. He just popped into another world and, hey, what's going on, guys? I brought a salad and some beer.
Right.
I don't know why he would bring salad and beer at the same time. Maybe he's, you know, a little bit for everybody.
Right. Maybe, and I've always liked this one, deities are created by the faith of people. Right? A little Terry Pratchett action.
Yes.
Small gods. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm following you on that. Were they concepts created from just existence itself, from life itself? So the concept of death, the concept of life, concept of the unknown or fear of the unknown. So these factors of being alive created the deities themselves. That's essentially the concept of consciousness or existence.
Right.
That too could also be a god or goddess. Sure.
Similar, but not exactly the same to what the theme, right? What is the theme of your pantheon?
I would say theme is almost vastly different, in my opinion.
I can see.
Because how they were created
versus what they actually are.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair.
And we'll get to the next part after that, because it's almost like, how are they created? What are they? What are they associated with? Those can be three vastly different things.
Okay.
But how do they fit together? So are they haphazardly created?
Right.
Are they put together, as you mentioned, in like a family or some, there's some kind of rationale between how they came together. In some game worlds, for example, the gods are just the gods. No one knows how they were created. They're just there. And some of the gods that writers have made are a little crazy.
Yeah.
So you might have a god of order and then this random medley of just various gods. And you're like, why do they have these versus this? And that's fine. You could have it like that. Maybe there's a little bit more of an order and everything is balanced out. Maybe there are more chaotic gods versus lawful gods or vice versa or whatever.
Sure. Well, one of them, speaking of like how things are balanced out, if you take the Dark Sun route, mm-hmm. right? Elemental gods and para-elemental / quasi-elemental gods.
Yeah.
But they're the entire deity system for the old Dark Sun game.
Elemental based. And that was it.
Very simple.
Because the gods were dead. Gods were gone. And so they just, that's all they had to pray to.
Yep. Because the elementals still existed.
Sure.
Do you have a god for absolutely everything under the sun?
Forgotten Realms.
I'm just saying. There's a goddess for misfits. Her name is Luru. She's a unicorn.
That's true.
And I like her.
Are there alignment specific gods?
Dragonlance.
Yeah. And generally other ones, but Dragonlance especially.
Well, Dragonlance specifically had alignment, right? They had a lawful evil. They had a lawful neutral, a lawful good, right? They literally had one for each.
That's a good point. Are they based off of the planes? So perhaps in your cosmology, there's a god for every planar realm. So whether it's the abyss or pandemonium or whatever it happens to be built out of.
This is one I have not seen that I actually like.
A planar based god?
Yeah.
System?
It's a deity based off of each, because then you get some representation that you don't always get a lot of, like the Beastlands. Like you don't see a whole lot of god of limbo, right? Like you might have a god that lives in limbo, but not generally.
He's a jolly frog, brother. God of Limbo's a jolly frog. He's got a tricorn hat.
Yeah. Ovipositor in his claws.
He's riding a little bike. It's got bells on it and stuff. Ding ding. That's a God I can get behind. A little chaotic neutral God. Just riding along in his merry way, just spreading joy and slod spawn.
I'm still working on your slod packed warlock, by the way.
You should. I can't wait for that. Yeah, so plane based gods would be very interesting. That also keeps the problem of the planes in order as well too. And this is something we are eventually going to get to, which is the concept of cosmology overall. Yes. But one of my biggest concerns about that, or pet peeves I would say, is you've got a bunch of gods jammed into like a couple of planes, and then like you said, some of these planes are just empty.
Yeah.
Like you don't see nobody praying to Primus on Mechanus.
Right.
Now in Forgotten Realms, there's, you know, I think Mistra is on Mechanus for some reason. Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she's part of the great order of the cosmos.
Yeah, but
sure. Uh huh. Okay. We're gonna keep moving.
We'll keep moving along. So all right. So I think planar base would be kind of cool. I like this other one that you have written down as well. Do you have several mini pantheons for each culture, or even full sized for each culture if you're slightly masochistic? So what do you mean by that?
So right, you take the Mulhorandis.
Okay.
They are a culture. They have their own pantheon.
Yep.
Right, Earth style, right? There's a dozen different cultures. Each culture has their own pantheon. You can absolutely do that. I would suggest,
if you like to write, you can do that.
Right. I would suggest bringing it down a couple notches, right? Do not attempt to do a full 1,000-person pantheon for every single culture, because if you look at the Greek pantheon, most people remember the names of 8, maybe 10 of them.
There's like 50 of them.
There are dozens. Exactly.
Yeah. There's like 50 of them. And I'm not even, yeah, go do a Google search on just some pantheon stuff. Well, look at the Indian gods.
You'll never get your world.
Tons
written.
Of them. They're all over the place. And most cultures have that as well.
Yeah.
Until cultures went like monotheistic, and that's fine. And it's totally cool if you want to do that.
But
we would just recommend you don't do that, because it's a lot of writing.
Well, not just that, but sooner or later, you theoretically want people to be able to play in this world that you're making. And if you try and do 50 gods for every culture in your entire world, nobody will ever get to play in your world.
Yeah, it's a lot of writing, man.
Write a novel at that point.
Now, when we're talking about theme, I think it should also be brought up that you need to figure out, and this goes in line with what you just said, what exactly do they represent? Like, what exactly do they represent? So, do you have a god of the forge and a god of fire?
Right.
Two different concepts.
Absolutely.
But they could be the same one.
Oh, yeah.
So, what are their, use a D&D term, what are their portfolios?
Right.
And are they an analogy to the world? So, for example, if the god of magic or goddess of magic dies frequently in some games, does magic go crazy when they die?
Or is she just immediately replaced?
Or is she immediately replaced?
Right. So let's say that is another way you could actually arrange your godhood, right? It's actually...
they're physical embodiments of a concept.
Right. And the concept is an office. And if the person in that office dies, then your world reaches out and snags the next embodiment of that. Congratulations, you're promoted. I don't want a promotion. Piss off, you're promoted.
So Theros, Mystic Odysseys of Theros,
yeah,
has it so that if one of the gods' power, their portfolio is basically who they are, they embody that portfolio, and say the god of the dead is incapacitated, nobody dies.
Right.
And so nobody gets promoted.
That's a little incarnations of immortality.
Yes, very much so. So what do they represent specifically? Another thing, are they a metaphor for society? So the Greeks,
sure.
Greeks and Romans, it was basically a metaphor for their society. Their gods represented ideals that they tried to strive to.
Right.
Or are they aspects of unknown things as well?
Right. Are you attempting to create a person that is in charge of why certain things happen.
I don't understand how things happen, and thus I make a deity for it.
Right. I have personified a storm. I have personified a tidal wave. Exactly.
Yeah. So there's a lot of different themes you can add. And by the way, you are free to mix and match these themes.
And should.
And should. Give it a leg. I would say. More flavor. Next up, and this falls in line with theme, how are they associated? So, and we kind of jumped in a little bit in terms of what are they representing exactly, but let's say you've got the god of pizza.
Yeah.
And what are the basic tenets of that? What is involved in being a god of pizza?
Like, I feel like the god of pizza probably doesn't get along with Jean-Pierre overly, but he's probably... I think the god of pizza is probably down with the god of steins.
I can
and probably
that.
The god of mugs too. Like he definitely and I would probably get down.
God of mugs get along with the god of pizza. I'm definitely down with that. But the god of health food, probably not.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
So what are the basic tenets of your specific deity set?
Right. I mean, you got to eat pizza.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that is a communion.
I mean, you know.
That is a perfect example of a rift in a church right there. You got the god of pizza, and you got your pineapple people and your non-pineapple people. There you go. That is the perfect example of a rift in a church.
Yeah, and see, what they just need to know is that it's all delicious.
Right.
It's all good. Do they have a favorite set of phrases or tenets or weapons? So in D&D, of course, you know, like lots of deities have their favored weapon that they can use, so... Some use a billy club, some use a longsword, some use, I don't know, scissors or some shit. But figure that out. And it doesn't have to be a weapon either. It could be favorite type of clothing, particular type of embodiment, like alignments.
Sure.
What kind of moral following do they have? What's the god of pizza? He's probably neutral.
You think?
I think so. What are you leaning towards?
I feel like the god of pizza is...
God of pizza can be scornful too, though.
That's true.
You get your mouth burned or you get cold pizza, or not even cold, lukewarm pizza. Nobody likes lukewarm. You know, that's the thing.
I do.
Pizza's great warm. Pizza's great cold. Lukewarm pizza, not so much.
No, I can do that.
You can still eat that? Okay. Yeah. Well, you're a true believer, sir.
I am.
So do they have any type of... We're just waxing philosophical about the god of pizza. But I do agree that the maitre d' god would get along with them. What sort of ceremonies maybe are involved in your particular tenant or your god or gods? Because if you're building a pantheon, you're going to have to do this a couple of times. And this is why we say do this, because you're going to be crunching these out.
Right. If you're doing multiple pantheons, remember... Some of these are going to be extremely similar.
What do they believe in?
Right.
What are some common ceremonies? What are they against?
Your half dozen gods of the spring or goddesses or whatever, they're going to have some shit in common, right? Like, I don't know, things springing forth from the earth, critters being born, like, I don't know, everything
birthing
that
and
has
babies
to do
and
with
sexing up stuff. Yeah, the spring, man. It's fertility.
Yeah.
Growing things. It's, you know, common tropes,
the
right?
The rising of the light. That's what happens in nature.
And if it doesn't, why doesn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe you've got some kind of crazy fertility goddess that you have to kill people first before you get it on, or I don't know, just, or maybe it's a maybe it's a spring god of... The monsters which sprout in the spring.
Sure.
The monster season.
Yeah. Your spring god could be a warrior god because all of the monstrous critters that have been battened down for your deep winter are freaking starving.
And they're hungry.
And here they come. And it happens every year.
You set your clock, spring forth, and attack.
Exactly.
Spring forth and duck and cover because there's winged beasties up in the air. Yeah, it could be. So think about that. That's what we're trying to get at.
All right. We've got the alignments. Do they have friends and enemies in the pantheon? Do your gods get along, though?
So the mood.
Right. We're going to go with the mood. Do they get along? This is going to give your players an idea of how your gods act, right?
And this goes towards whether they are somewhat non-existent in terms of interactions, or if they are, you know, a bunch of bickering, infighting,
right,
incestuous deities like
Greek gods.
Like Greek gods, yeah.
Right. Are they Greek gods or are they Egyptian gods who, for the most part, are known for just kind of sticking to their own ballywick, mostly?
This throws a lot of fun into your storytelling aspects because you can get into the intrigues of various pantheons. Your characters could get into intrigues of various pantheons, either through the pantheons themselves or through their followers.
That's true.
And is it something different than that? Like, I love this example that you have. Is there a celestial office building where your Hermes equivalent works in the mailroom? Sure. Why not? It could be anything like that. That's ridiculous, and we should definitely do that sometime. He works, you know, with the maitre d' god and the pizza god.
Right. I mean, somebody's got to get the mail to the CEO, right?
Yep. Now, you've got your theme, you've got your mood. Now, let's talk about your interactions.
All right. So, an interaction, you're actually referring to how do they interact with the world, not with each other.
Right.
Right.
So, we talked about how they bicker amongst themselves or don't. How do they bicker amongst mortals or the world or don't?
Right.
So, they could be, they may have created the world and then they're just there. They don't interfere anymore. Or, you know, they might be Zeus rolling in with like a swan, sexing up some lady every other weekend.
Sure.
And that's why you've got this proliferation of demigods walking around.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be.
They can meddle like in the Forgotten Realms.
Oh, yeah. Walking amongst mortals. They could be standoffish in Eberron.
Right. They could be everyday creatures. I like how you mentioned this one. Are they like small gods, spirit of the woods, or god of mugs?
That's hilarious.
Oh, you added it in?
I actually added that before you answered that, and I didn't even realize, and I'm glad you didn't see it until now.
That's hilarious.
We're on the same level.
Yep.
Isn't that wonderful?
It's almost like we've shared a brain for a really long time.
Are they non-existent, uncaring forces like Dark Sun?
Yeah.
And they don't give a fuck.
No, they are just forces of the cosmos.
Sure.
The god of gravity, right? Like, I pull things down. It's what I do.
I find, and it depends on the theme that you're going with, but I find a little bit of some variation between those helps. Some of the gods may be uncaring completely, and that's really cool. And then occasionally throwing in a little bit of mortal interaction works. But, I mean, again, your game may vary, right?
Yeah. I like, because each god is its own person, creature, etc. I like the fact that I feel like you should mix it up because the god of pizza is going to be far more social than the god of hermits.
Oh, absolutely.
Although there's probably some bleed over between the two.
I could see that as well. And the god of gamers.
Yes.
God of pizza, god of hermits, god of gamers. They've got a little trifecta right there.
Just saying.
So figure that out.
Now, lastly, and still importantly, though, what do your gods look like?
Yeah. What do they manifest as, either in the mind's eye of your players or literally in the game world?
Right.
Are your gods large, powerful versions of their worshipers, or are they even humanoid? You know, are they just some kind of, they could be like a shooting star or, I don't know, like a winged firebird or something like that.
Or if you've got gods that were created by the faith of their worshipers, maybe they appear to each individual worshiper the way each individual worshiper sees them.
Or they're an amalgamation of all of the thoughts of the worshipers total. So
sure.
If all of the worshipers believe something in particular, that's what they appear as. But as time shifts, they begin to shift as well.
Sure. You know, end of the day, she of the green eyes will always have green eyes.
Yeah, unless that story's changed.
Right.
Are they representations of what people assume they are?
Right.
Do they have favored forms? And this is, they don't have to have like one appearance. They could have multiple appearances.
Sure. They're gods.
Yeah, they're gods. It'd be anything they want. Yeah. Do what you want with that. Are there particular forms they like? Are there particular forms you will never see them as.
Right. So, like, soon, right? She's the goddess of beauty and love and all that. Probably not going to pop up as a gibbering mouther.
Most likely, no.
Probably not. I feel like
that's physically attractive in most of the guises, or all of the guises.
Right.
Being the goddess of beauty.
Right. Although maybe to another gibbering mouther.
Maybe there's some sexy gibbering mouthers just gibbering around, just gibber, 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 gibber. And they've got, you know, they're playing some Isley Brothers in the background, and there's another gibbering mouther coming up and soon is pleased. They make little baby gibbering mouthers. A lot of
gibbering.
A lot of dental hygiene you have to deal with a gibbering mouther.
And so much.
All right. I like this as well. Maybe your pantheon is based off of magical beasts or, for example, representations of actual animals too, like crow or wolf.
Right. I mean, you could do it in a totemic style tradition, but you can also go the opposite direction and do it in a more like actual magical creature. Right? Like
dragon, manticore, and so on and so forth.
A unicorn as the god of healing makes perfect sense. They literally have healing powers.
I could see that.
So the first time a halfling ever met a unicorn was wounded in the wood. It was mauled trying to protect a baby chipmunk, right? And the unicorn was like, that is a noble thing to do. I'm going to heal you. That's... whoa, who are you? What are you? And this is amazing, right? And so maybe that's how it starts.
I like that. I also like what you said, a choker or a dark mantle is the god of assassins.
Right?
Yeah, man. Just swoop in and just fuck you guys up. Just little gig.
Yep. This is just a little gig.
Just a little gig, man. So a rat would be the god of pizza. Pizza rat.
I feel like a cranium rat.
Cranium rat? Yeah. Yeah, cranium rat, definitely. Playing video games with his mind.
Right.
It's just got like a NES controller that's just, the buttons are pressing, but he's just kind of, I see the cranium rat kind of slouched on a couch, you know, like kind of upright.
Sure.
And there's just an NES controller in his lap, and it's just moving.
I feel like you're hungry. You've had a very pizza theme tonight.
It's just happens sometimes. So these are all a couple of ideas that we've thrown at you guys to help make your pantheons better. And hopefully you can use some of these to create new worlds, create new religions for your characters, and potentially kill them all.
Right. And the other thing I like is for people who don't necessarily like gods and goddesses and that whole thing, it gives you maybe a couple of options that are a little less Grecian, what have you, right? Something you can work with that isn't
not so anthropomorphic.
Right.
So you could have deities of concepts and explore that instead of a bunch of dudes wearing togas.
Right.
Have we missed anything regarding pantheons?
Almost certainly.
Absolutely. Yes, we have. Go ahead, write to us, info@goblinscorner.com, or you can reach me, Eric@goblinscorner.com.
Or me, Matt@goblinscorner.com.
We've got a website, goblinscorner.com. We've got a Facebook, Goblins Corner. We've got a Twitter, Goblins Corner. We have Twitch, Goblins Corner. Instagram, The Goblins Corner.
Because you just had to be different.
That one thing is different. We're all over the internet, obviously. Feel free to get in touch with us. We like that sort of thing.
Yeah, we appreciate the interaction. We're very social people.
We are. And rate us on iTunes and a few other places, I think, because...
Spotify.
And you can't rate on Spotify.
You can't Spotify?
No. Okay. But we did this little Twitter thing where we said we would sing a sea shanty if we got at least 100 ratings.
How's that coming?
I've got it written down.
Okay.
So just in case.
Just in case.
Just in case. That's all the time we have for today. Once again, my name is Eric.
And I'm Matt.
Have a great week.
Good night.
The Goblins Corner has been written and produced by Eric Holden and Matt Staples.
Music by D20.
This is a Subterranean production.